This didn't exist in Russia, mainly because the Russian state wanted to make sure that its power was unlimited. People have talked about the hypertrophic growth of the Russian state more than any other state in Europe. And for many observers, including Russians as well as foreigners, this hypertrophy of the Russian state and the weakness of other sources of initiative, initially an aristocracy, was exemplified by the rule of Ivan IV, of Ivan IV, Ivan the Terrible, who ruled from 1533 to 1584, very same time, by the way, when Elizabeth ruled England. He was the first ruler to take the title of Tsar, no longer just Grand Prince, a title he adopted from the Greek Caesar and meant to show his unlimited power. And his reign was marked by a bloody war. In fact, it's best to call it a bloody terror against powerful aristocrats designed to ensure his absolute authority and the absolute subservience of all his subjects, no matter how high their rank. This backwardness would haunt Russia and Russians well into the 20th century, one of the reasons I've dwelled on it for some time. Indeed, it haunts Russia now in the 21st century. But it's important to also emphasize it was rapidly being overcome in the 18th and the 19th centuries. Indeed, by the 19th century, despite relative economic and social and political backwardness, in many ways, Russia was also a European power with a European culture. This was a power able, as we'll talk about later, in the 1800s, the early 1800s, to defeat Napoleon and march its armies all the way into Paris, and to remain a major force in European and world diplomacy. It was a nation able to produce, a state able to produce, a country able to produce great works of literature. Think of Tolstoy or Dostoevsky or Chekhov. Great music recognized all over the world. Think of Tchaikovsky or Rimsky-Korsakov or Mussorgsky. And great science. Think of great scientists known all over the world, such as Pavlov or Mendeleev. In fact, travelers to Russia in the 19th century may have been, indeed often were, appalled by the dictatorial power of the Russian monarchy, by the lack of civil freedoms, by the weakness of other elite classes. They tended to be dismayed by the poverty suffered by the majority of the Russian people. But they also recognized that Russians, at least educated Russians, were as sophisticated and European as themselves, at least the elite. And of course, needless to say, our 20th century world was in many ways shaped by what Russia produced, by the Soviet communist system, a force that attracted many, that repelled many, but can't be ignored. Clearly, Russia matters then in thinking about the modern world. But Russia's history is also, I think, important and compelling as a human story, not just the story of events in a distant land, however important those may be, but also the story of individual lives that really can seem quite alive and real and important to us. Now, this is a contradictory story of lives. It's a story of people's efforts to figure out what life means, its fundamental meanings, and the meaning of its own nation's role in the world. But it's also a story of great uncertainty and doubt. It's a story of people's efforts to decide questions of right and wrong, fundamental moral and ethical questions, how to create a society built on principles of justice, for example. But it's also a story of great evil and great injustice. The human story of Russia is also a story of great imagination, people thinking of different possible ways to live, a time of a story of great creativity. It's also a story of great tragedy. I should say that for me, as someone who's studied Russia for almost 25 years now, Russia, I don't think, is, as Winston Churchill famously called it, a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. To be sure, it's a dense and complex story, but it's compelling, I think, partly because we can understand it. We can understand causes, we can understand patterns, we can understand conditions, but I think above all, we can understand and empathize with Russians and their experience at trying to create a nation, a country for themselves. We can also sympathize and understand the meaning, even, of their great suffering and tragedy. Now, before I begin this story, I'd like to offer a brief roadmap of where we're going, a guide to some of the people we'll be considering and to some of the themes and ideas that will link these stories together.